There's no free lunch when it comes to investing. But what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to the Free Lunch Podcast, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast with Karen and Steve. Yep, you heard that right. No Colin Andrews or Greg Kreminski.
Just us running the show.
You know what, Karen? I think we might need a new jingle just to change things up, you know, because this is our show.
That's right. We're taking over.
Yeah. Karen, tell me, what did we talk about last week?
Last week, we had a great conversation. We spoke about Daniel Crosby's book, The Soul of Wealth. And we also talked a little bit about Bare Naked Ladies.
Ooh, Bare Naked Ladies.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They came back. We were talking about if I had $1 million and really what drives the soul of wealth. What does wealth mean to people? What do people do with that money? It was a great episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure was. Well, today we have a special guest with us.
We do.
Yeah. From GBL Inc., we have Tetenda Mawoyo. Did I say that right?
Perfect.
Yes, I've been practicing.
10 out of 10.
Tetenda is the manager of client relations and development at GBL Inc., which is an independent actuarial consulting firm. They're one of Canada's leading independent experts on individual pension plans, which is IPPs, retirement compensation agreements, RCAs, and health benefit plans, HBPs. With over a decade of experience, Tetenda specializes in helping financial professionals and their clients navigate retirement and tax planning strategies. Welcome, Tetenda.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. I was just saying, I'm actually a listener of the podcast as well. Uh-huh. I can even sing the jingle. I know I was saying I can. I hope you don't ask me to.
We're waiting.
If you do, I will.
We're waiting.
But I'm a big fan, so it's a real pleasure to be with you guys on this side.
Well, we're happy you're with us today.
And I have a quick question before we jump into anything.
Sure.
Are you an actuarial?
No. So I'm not an actuary myself.
Yep.
I actually did go to school to study to be an actuary. I started off at GBL actually working in the actuarial department. So I'm a major nerd. But I think I got more interested in, rather than being an actuary, more kind of communicating what they do and helping people, I guess, in the financial advisory world, kind of leverage the actuarial side of things to serve their clients. So that's kind of how I found myself in this sort of hybrid role. I kind of talk about being actuaries, but I'm not one myself.
Gotcha. Right. And did you start with GBL?
I did. Oh. I was actually back in my university days as an intern. And then kind of they were hopefully made a good decision to keep me on full time after that.
Yeah, sounds like it.
That's excellent. We have one of those right now, a summer student.
We sure do.
Yeah, he might stick around for how many years have you been at GBL?
Oh, I got to do math. Since 2012.
So okay.
13 years now.
Nice. Yeah. Lucky number 13.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, we are excited to have you on the show today.
Yeah, and I'm really happy to be here.
Wonderful. What are we talking about specifically?
Well, you know what? We brought Tetenda in to talk about IPPs. IPPs are interesting. We have several clients who are involved with IPPs. And what better than to ask the expert on it?
Mm-hmm.
So Tetenda, tell us exactly, what is an IPP?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I actually like to take a kind of a literal description of it, kind of looking at the name. So an IPP stands for Individual Pension Plan. So I actually start with the last two words, pension plan, which is really what it is. So maybe to kind of help me explain this, I'll invite you to think about my mother-in-law. Hi, Mom. I love you. And she's a teacher, right? And she's employed by the Calgary Board of Education. And because of that, she participates in a pension plan, right, where she's an employee. And the employer agrees to put contributions into this pension plan for her retirement. And so when somebody like a business owner sets up an IPP, it really is a pension plan that they're doing for themselves as an employee of their corporation that they do their craft or their business through. The first word there is individual, right? So unlike some of these larger plans, we have a bunch of employees kind of participating in it. This is typically done for one or two individuals. So it's on a much more individualized level that is done, where somebody owns a corporation, if because they're also an employee, they can participate in this pension plan with their employer or their corporation.
Gotcha. So in terms of candidates, you had mentioned business owners. Who isn't it good for?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So typically when we're looking at IPPs, the people we're typically looking for, it's one, it's business owners or I'd say incorporated professionals. So I guess in our world, these are people we'd call, you know, you're sort of an owner manager, right? In terms of you own a corporation, but at the same time, you're sort of employed by it. You're working through it. So you're sort of an employee shareholder combination there. So it works really well for that group for reasons we can probably get into a bit more later on. It typically wouldn't be a great idea for something like an arm's length employee, mm-hmm. right? So in as much as GBL might love me as an employee, they never set up an IPP for myself, mm-hmm. right? Because I'm arm's length, the roles become very strenuous. It can be a real cash flow liability. So typically you're doing this for the owner manager themselves. There's other sort of qualifiers. I'm not sure how much you want me to get into that in terms of some of the criteria you sort of look into.
Yeah,
in
terms absolutely. Of who's a good fit.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So like I already mentioned, one is you're looking for an owner manager. Mm-hmm. The real CRA term there is anybody who owns at least 10% of any class of shares in the corporation.
Okay.
Right. So that's sort of the baseline kind of requirement, if you will. Number two is you're looking for somebody, I mean, I've used the term employee a few times, right? But this is somebody who they actually pay themselves a salary from the corporation, right? So somebody wouldn't classify if they just pay themselves a dividends, for example, right? You need that T4 salary income. You're actually looking at an age component as well. I'll kind of gloss over this. We can go into more detail later on if you really want to get a bit more nerdy. But it's typically somebody at least age 40
okay.
and above, because that's actually when it makes more sense compared to something like an RSP.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say those are sort of the three main conditions. Now, there's a couple more I'll add to that because in my role, I literally help, you know, thousands of advisors consider IPPs for thousands of clients. And in addition to sort of those three basic, I guess, criteria, a couple more we look for is, I suppose, a business owner who has corporate surplus, right? So what this means is their business income, they have enough to, pay their employees, pay themselves and what they need for consumption, pay all the bills, and there's something left over in profits, right? Because that's actually what you need to be able to set up and fund an IPP.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one, which is not necessarily a necessity, but I guess icing on the cake, but it's typically a client who's already been doing a good job of saving in their corporation, right? They've already built up a corporate surplus that they might need for business purposes. But now the question is, well, I'm trying to save more for my retirement. Does it make sense for me to keep building up this corporate surplus? Or do I maybe look at other things like IPPs that might give me other tax advantages along the way?
Question for you. So I've got a friend who's a doctor, and I know that they have corporate accounts as well, but there's very strict rules regarding doctors. Now, do you find that a lot of professionals in medicine have IPPs?
Yeah, I'd say honestly, if you're looking at the market and you wanted to sort of try to segment it, I think typically doctors kind of form the largest block.
Interesting.
So one is they can set up IPPs. So obviously that's the first check. Mm-hmm. I think for that group specifically, it's, you know, unlike other, I say, healthcare employees, they don't have a pension plan that's backstopped by a government. So really what they have is to sort of save in their corporation. And that's really what's going to pay all the bills, both today and retirement. So it really becomes an important question in terms of, well, how can you make the most of the billions we're getting in our practice? So we see the group very often look at an IPPs to say, hey, is there maybe a more tax advantaged way I can save for my retirement?
Gotcha.
That's excellent. Yeah. So probably a month or two back, we had a coworker of yours on the podcast, Ryan Ackers, shout out.
Yeah.
And he spoke about RCAs and about SERPs. But one of the things that he has said in the past was that an IPP is like an RSP on steroids, or maybe he said mm-hmm. supercharged.
Right.
I can't remember. Probably supercharged.
Either one. I like it.
Same thing.
Yep.
Can you talk about maybe some of the differences between RSPs and IPPs, or even some of the similarities?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely, Ryan would have kind of say the statement. I mean, even on our deck, we kind of call IPPs or supercharged RSP.
Yep.
And there's a few key reasons for that. I think most people are generally familiar with how RSPs work, right? Is you kind of put money in, it's tax deferred, you get to invest and grow it, your returns are tax sheltered, you only tax on what you pull out. And it's a sort of the same sort of mechanics in an IPP. Some of the differences there in terms of why I suppose business owners will consider an IPP instead, maybe two reasons. One is in an IPP, you get much more contribution room compared to an RSP,
mm-hmm.
especially when somebody goes beyond age 40.
Right, there's that 40 age that you were talking about before.
Exactly. So the way it works is when somebody's younger than 40, they actually get more contribution room in the RSP. So it makes more sense to use mm-hmm. that. From 40 onwards, it starts to ramp up. So I brought up PayPal, some numbers here, so I can kind of get my numbers exact.
Yeah, for sure.
But for example, if somebody is 55, the most RSP room somebody could get this year in 2025 when they're doing this recording is about 32,500 is the most you could get. But for that person who's 55 in an IPP, they get $47,000 of contribution room.
That's significant.
Yeah, so 45%, I think that's something.
That's supercharged.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And the way it works is the older somebody gets, those annual contributions actually get larger and larger. So that by the time somebody's 65, if they're still working and paying themselves a large salary, you know, in 25, they still get the same $32,490. But in an IPP, it's now up to $54,000 in terms of the annual contribution room. So about a $20,000 advantage. So I think that goes to the why we call it a supercharged RSP, just because somebody's able to get access to much more contribution room. Mm-hmm. And what that actually means in play is similar to an RSP, contributions to an IPP are tax deferred,
mm-hmm.
right? In terms of when the money goes in, you're not paying personal tax on it. In fact, your company gets a deduction for the contributions and that we defer those taxes to when the money is eventually pulled out.
Gotcha.
So somebody's just able to tax defer a bigger mm-hmm. chunk of what I guess they get in as income from their company.
Okay.
And we have some clients here that have IPPs with you at GBL. Maybe you can explain that. Is it possible for an individual to have multiple IPPs or maybe structure it differently as their business continues to grow?
Yeah, it's a great question. So typically, if you're looking at an individual, let's say it's a particular business owner, John Doe, typically, we're going to have one IPP for that individual.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we do have some select clients who actually, they have involved in multiple corporations that they own, you know, I guess, serial entrepreneurs, if you will. And in those circumstances, we can actually have multiple corporations participate in the same IPP.
Mm.
Now, so some of these sort of contribution limits that I talked about, I mean, they do have to be shared among the corporations, so you don't necessarily get to double up, if you will. But for some of those sort of unique situations and things can be structured in a way that makes sense for the client.
Because it's individual,
exactly,
as you started off with saying, right?
Exactly. Now, I would be remiss to, Karen, you asked a great question, right, in terms of what are some of the similarities
mm-hmm.
between IPPs and fees. Hopefully I've done a good job of summarizing that. I think there are some key differences as well to be aware of. One in particular, So I think IPPs are great in terms of there's lots of tax benefits. I can get into more details later on. But the biggest one is, you know, there's all these larger contributions you can put in, more tax deferral, yada, yada, yada. So somebody can essentially build up more registered assets compared to what they could do with just an RSP. Now, when the money comes out on the other side, pension withdrawals from an IPP, they're more what we call locked in,
mm-hmm.
right? In terms of, like, for example, I started off talking about my mother-in-law mm-hmm. and she has a pension plan. The specific type of pension plan it is called a defined benefit pension plan.
Right.
So what that means is there's a calculation that's going to be done to say when you retire, this is how much you can start to pull out on a yearly basis.
Mm-hmm.
We might maybe increase it with inflation to increase it year to year, but this is sort of a locked in amount you have, unless you want to try maybe wind it up and take all the money out to like a RSP or what have you. So obviously it's not as flexible as something like an RSP where you can sort of pick and choose what you take out on a yearly basis, but at the same time, you get much more stronger tax benefits by using it. So the reason I mentioned that is I think that's why people like yourselves become very important, right? Mm-hmm. Canvas Wealth, because what you can do is, sure, this is a feature of the IPP, but we can actually take a look at your entire plan, if you will, and say, hey, is this locked-in feature really a problem? Or do you honestly have enough flexibility based on other things you have going on
right.
in your life? So I think people like yourselves sort of have a financial planning lead-in mm-hmm. in your practice are super important. So if you're listening to this, you better reach out to Canvas Wealth.
So you had mentioned IPPs for the individual. Can someone be attached to that IPP? So for example, a spouse.
Right.
If they are involved with the business, a shareholder of the corporation, can they also be part of that IPP?
Yeah, yes, they can. So it applies to everybody. But we started off talking about physicians or doctors, for example. Mm-hmm. So that's something we commonly see with the block and other professionals, where typically the spouse is also employed, might be doing some admin stuff or what have you. And so they can be added in the same IPP as the Jane or John Doe, sort of gotcha. The practicing professional. So you could have an IPP with both the husband and the wife or the spouses participating together, and they sort of get the same benefits that we've already been talking about.
Okay. What else, Karen?
Well, so we've talked about some of the key tax benefits Do you have any additional key tax benefits other than being able to shelter more money, being able to withdraw it at a time when you're in a lower tax bracket? Anything mm-hmm. else specific you can think about? Sounds like there's maybe some income splitting potential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I mean, maybe I can answer that in two categories. I'll kind of talk about maybe some of the company benefits and the benefits to the individual as well.
Yes, please.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right, let's give this a shot. So in terms of benefits to the company, one would be anything that's contributed to an IPP is tax deductible to the company. So what that means is, you know, somebody has $100,000 of profits and they decide to put $30,000 into an IPP. They don't get paid tax or corporate tax on the $30,000, just on whatever's left within the corporation, which mm-hmm. if my math is right, is $70,000. So hopefully that's simple enough math there. So obviously that's sort of a key difference where if somebody's going to save within a corporation, they can, and there's great reasons to do that, but you sort of have to pay a corporate tax first and then invest whatever's left over. So the sort of the corporate tax deductions that you have, the company benefits as well as the tax shelter growth in terms of anything that's any interest, dividends, capital gains in the IPP. There's no tax paid on that. So you kind of get the complete tax deferral mm-hmm. on the investment growth as well. The last one I'll mention on that to the company is we call it time to plan. So what that means is, as every business owner, anybody incorporated would know, is in their corporation, they have a year end. Mm-hmm. And they have 120 days after the year end to make a contribution and then still backdate the deduction Ooh. To the previous fiscal year.
Nice.
So I think that's a nice feature because it just allows somebody, again, if they're kind of, let's say, working with you and really kind of you're trying to put on that planning hat to say, hey, what's the best course of action based on what happened last year? It gives you a nice 4-month buffer to kind of do the planning and see how best to utilize the IPP. In terms of the individual level, some of the key benefits there is there's the increased, I guess, contribution room that I've already kind of alluded to. So what that means is you can tax defer on more income. There's income splitting that's available as well as early as age 55. So any withdrawals from an IPP, you can split the income with a spouse there. And then probably the last one I'll mention is once money goes into an IPP and should anything happen to, let's say, the member or if the member spouse is involved at all, if there's anything left over, we say the client, I guess, owns the surplus or anything that's left over. So what that means is there's no situation where the money is having to go back to the company or go back to whoever else type of thing. It's either at the end of the day going to go to the client's estate, or if they've named any beneficiaries, it's going to go to their kids. So it's sort of once money goes into an IPP, mm-hmm. it's sort of a family asset at that point.
And is there any such thing as a spousal rollover in the event of the owner dying?
Yes, there is.
Some tax advantages there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and honestly, that's the, while there is an option to, you know, if the member passes away, to try to keep the IPP open, we find most clients will sort of take the money and just transfer it over to the spouses. It will be to the locked-in RSP or locked-in RIF. And the benefit there is typically all the assets can go tax-deferred. You don't have to keep paying an actuarial firm like GBL annual fees because typically there's no more money that's going to be contributed anyways.
Right.
So it's typically an option that makes a lot of sense.
Let's talk about the fees a little bit more because you are right. This is absolutely a supercharged RSP. Yeah. And it gives a lot of flexibility. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of tax benefits, a lot of sheltering. And usually when things sound too good to be true, there's a catch. Now, in this case, I don't think there's a catch, but there are some fees that people should be aware of.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess to answer that question, and maybe I should probably very briefly describe what it is a firm like GBL does.
Yes.
All right, because if we're going to be charging, it's like, well, what value am I actually getting from you guys?
What am I paying you
what
for?
What am I paying for? Exactly. So it's like I've mentioned, when this is set up, it's a pension plan, right? So there's obviously sort of a setup process, there's certain documents that need to be prepared. We've talked a lot about, there's a lot of tax benefits involved. And I'm old enough to know that when there's tax benefits involved, there's CRA involved, there's mm-hmm. lots of filings involved. And so I think historically, especially way before my time, there was sort of a need to have a tax lawyer involved, a pension lawyer involved, maybe a specialized accountant to do all the annual filings or whatnot. So GBL has sort of tried to come in and kind of consolidate all of those requirements, where there's sort of a one-stop, I guess, back office for the IPP specifically. So that's what we're doing. So in terms of doing the setup and all the annual admin filing work, or the actuarial work that the actuaries have to do to calculate what's actually allowed to be contributed into this mm-hmm. pension plan. So in terms of fees, right now we are, for a plan with one individual, it's about $1,700 a year.
Ooh. That's very affordable.
So that's the feedback we typically get.
Yes.
It's just affordable. It's deductible to the corporation as well, so that helps. But you know, when we kind of present the, I guess, the benefit in terms of the numbers to clients and the fees, typically the feedback we get is, oh, that's very reasonable given mm-hmm. the benefit I'm getting. If you have multiple individuals involved, for example, you've got a member and a spouse, like you both mentioned, then the fee typically will go up to about $2,200 a year.
Okay, so not even double,
yeah.
Less than.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. And you did mention that it's deductible as well,
yes,
to the corporation.
Correct.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
What else do business owners need to know about costs and administration? Because when I'm hearing this, I would think that a common question that listeners at this point might have is, well, who's managing my money?
Right.
Right. And I know, well, we know
right.
who's mm-hmm. involved, but perhaps you can talk a little bit about what that structure looks like. Like
right.
what is the responsibility of GBL?
Right. So one thing I'll say about GBL is we're not involved in asset management at all. And I think we're firm believers that we never will be. For people in our role, I think that's an important distinction where we're kind of trying to consult and give advice on strategies that at the same time we're not sort of trying to invest the money as well, right? So it's we kind of bring the actual expertise, like I mentioned, in terms of I'd summarize it as sort of the compliance support, the administrative support that's required with the CRA, the goals, the risk profile, and what have you. So they're sort of, you're sort of, the client is working with you directly on that piece. And we're sort of there in a really sort of a supportive partner role in terms of, well, you're going to work with Karen, with Stephen, in terms of managing all the contributions and the investments. And we're going to be there to make sure that everything is done appropriately, everything is felt on time, that the way this plan is designed and being structured is in line with what, as you're doing sort of the planning, it is in line with what the goal or what the, well, I guess what the vision is that mm-hmm. you and your client are working towards. So in terms of sort of a day-to-day, what that actually looks like, typically in January of each year, GBL would reach out, let's say, to Canvas and say, hey, we know you have this client, we're helping out to the IPP. What happened in the last calendar year in terms of the IPP? What did we put in? What are the assets looking like? We get that information. And then we have some fantastic people in our administrative department. And then they take that information, they prepare all the filings, and we actually submit it directly to the CRA. So it's a pretty simple process. We try to make it for the client and yourselves, where we sort of ask for the information and we're preparing all the paperwork and submitting it directly to the CRA. And then you just get a notice saying, hey, this work was required, this was the deadline, and it's done before the deadline.
And I like the fact that there's these checks and balances in place and these layered approaches, because we can all focus on what we are experts in,
yeah,
while also having the confidence in knowing that our partners are doing exactly what they need to do. So it's really worry-free investing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to Tenda, I know maybe not in our world, but, you know, markets do go up and down, and sometimes, you know, volatility leads to a year where, you know, sometimes we can't control what the markets are doing.
Right.
Or there's maybe a shortfall mm-hmm. or there's a negative return. Oh, I can't believe I said that.
It happens.
It happens, right? Like, let's be realistic.
24 right. calendar yeah. years out of 97, it has happened.
Right. Correct, yeah. Right? So can you talk a little bit about, so those contribution rooms, what happens if there is a shortfall in the portfolio in 1 year?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'll touch on that. And just as you're asking that question, you know, I kind of try to talk about some of the main tax benefits of the IPP. There's another one that came to mind that's not necessarily tax related, but I'll be able to touch on that. But to answer your question is, I think one of the most underappreciated features of an IPP is exactly what you just asked about, which is what happens if, because there's volatility, right? And mm-hmm. we're not going to get away from that. Mm-hmm. And so when an actuary at GBL is doing the nerdy math
mm-hmm.
in terms of what can be put into this IPP, it's actually CRA that says, well, we should assume that whatever's put in is going to grow at a certain benchmark return.
Mm-hmm.
And they've said that at 7.5%, right? So it's not a mandatory return that somebody has to attain, if you will. But what it is it's sort of a benchmark that we need to measure the IPP against.
Yeah.
So what happens is when we sort of do a health check on the IPP once every 3 years, we sort of compare what's in the IPP account to that benchmark with a few other factors that come into play as well. And so what happens is if the returns on the IPP are below whatever that benchmark works out to be, mm-hmm. the client is actually permitted to put in more money into the IPP.
That's right.
To help the account.
That's so impressive.
I know.
Kind of keep up with that pace. And so what I think this is sort of a benefit is, one, it's that we call it a top up. Mm-hmm. It's not mandatory, right? So if somebody has more of a, you know, they're working with your team. So you guys have done, I know you do a great job in terms of just the behavioral coaching and saying, mm-hmm. hey, this is how markets behave. So somebody might choose to say, you know what, I'm just going to keep to the plan that we set, you know, years ago. But somebody might choose to say, hey, you know what, I'm having a good year in my business. I could use the additional tax deductions. So maybe let me put more money into the IPP. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a very beneficial feature.
That's
right?
Huge.
I think so.
It really is. And so now what happens on the flip side? Let's say we're shooting the lights out instead of 7.5, we're bringing in
30% a year.
Yeah. Well, okay. Come on. Settle down.
This is a great question. So, we like to say when it comes to IPPs, CRA is actually very reasonable.
Don't hear that often.
Amen to that. So, you know, if we underperform the benchmark, which I say can be as good as 7.5%, mm-hmm. For every dollar you underperform whatever the benchmark works out to be, you can put in an extra dollar to keep up to pace. If we overshoot the benchmark, CRA actually gives us a buffer on the top end. The way it kind of works out, and again, I promise I'm not going to get too nerdy here, but when we do the health check on the IPP, what we're sort of looking at is saying, well, based on this business owner's age and what their salaries have been and sort of what, you know, I talked about there's been a defined benefit pension plan, right? So there's sort of a pension income we're sort of working towards in the future. Based on all those factors, we will do the fun math of figuring out, well, how much should we have in this IPP today, right? Now, CRA says, well, we'll do, you know, how much you should have. CRA actually lets us have a 25% buffer on top of that.
Nice.
Without having to make any adjustments.
Over the life of the IPP or?
It's at the point of the valuation.
Okay.
So, yeah. So when we do sort of that health check, on that day, we'll say, you know, this is how much we should have. As long as you don't have any more than, I guess, a 25%, we call it a surplus at mm-hmm. that point, then it's sort of business as usual.
Right.
Once we overshoot that, which is, I mean, you've done a bang up job. So it's kind of having a,
you're welcome.
Oh, yeah, exactly, right? It's like a good
pat on the back.
Exactly. I made you too much money.
Exactly. Ho-ho. But it's at that point, once you exceed that sort of 25% threshold, that's when CRA will say, well, we might have to start to limit additional contributions until we bring the surplus back down under the 25% threshold.
That seems incredibly reasonable.
Yeah.
Like I said, they're very reasonable. CRA, if you're listening, please keep it up.
Yeah, we like this.
Yes.
Yeah. This is fantastic.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, right? Like IPPs seem to be this hidden gem. I don't find enough people talking about it. I don't find enough accountants talking about it. So I'm glad that we're actually going through this process with you, Tatenda, to kind of give us, you know, the deets on IPPs. What are some other misconceptions or objections like people might have in terms of IPPs? What do you say to them?
Yeah, it's a great question. I probably have maybe 3 to 4 that I can mention off the top of my head. So one is, you know, IPPs are expensive, right? It's if I set this up, their goals make profits. And we say, I mean, I've kind of mentioned our fees, and we'll say respectfully, obviously, that's a subjective, you know, consideration. We would say for the fees that you're typically going to charge like a GBL is pretty reasonable given the upside benefit.
Yeah.
So that's something we come across. Something else we still come across, and this used to be true back in the day, which was if a business owner or a professional set up an IPP, it was sort of a significant cash flow liability to their company. Mm-hmm. But what I mean by that is, you know, I just talked about all these amazing contribution amounts that you can put in. I mean, like $50,000 if you're 65 this year, right?
Correct.
It looks, sounds great. But it used to be that even if a business owner was having a challenging year or a tough year, the regulators would sort of come knocking on the door and say, we don't care what's going on with your business. You just need to find a way to come up with this $50,000 and put it in, right? The rules have now changed where if you do this for these business owners or professionals, it kind of works like an RSP, whereas this is the contribution room you have. If it makes sense to use it, go for it. If it makes sense to kind of carry it forward to a future year when things are better for your situation, you have the flexibility.
Oh, amazing.
As well, right?
Wow.
And maybe the last one I'll mention is, and I still do come across this is, you know, IPPs are just overly complicated. So let's not even bother looking into it.
You just broke down the entire IPP process in less than 30 minutes.
I like to think so, but I did a good job. But yeah, so we think it's, you know, I don't want to be too self-promoting, but I am really appreciative of, I guess, what GBL has built going back to 1995 when Gordon B. Lang started the company. And I think, you know, when you work with a partner who has the people, the processes and the service, that works well, then things that might be complicated can become really simplified and easy to take advantage of. So to your point, I'm actually very busy getting a lot of requests for even the accounting community, because they're looking to understand this more. And because we think we don't say it works for everybody, but it's certainly worth looking into for a lot of people, because it could be a big missed opportunity for the right type of person.
And I'm assuming, just because we talked about how it's similar to a pension, how it can, you can do income splitting, it's probably creditor proof then?
Yes. So it's creditor protected. So, I mean, I think based on my knowledge, is RSPs come with very strong creditor protection as well. But the advantage is because you can put more into an IPP, then somebody can creditor protect significantly more of the retirement assets.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you compare an IPP to maybe solely saving in a corporation, then obviously that's where the creditor protection really shines.
Amazing. Yeah.
Wow. So if someone's interested in exploring an IPP, what would you say are the next steps?
Give a call to Canvas Wealth.
Yeah.
But it's in all honesty, we think, we take the approach that for this to have good consideration, while an actuary can help provide the contribution numbers, and we can make it look very attractive, because it is. At the end of the day, it's how does this fit into your entire picture?
Right. It's got to make sense.
It's got to make sense with your compensation strategy, because you can't just be a dividend warrior. You got to have some salary and TFO mixed in there as well. So even if somebody reaches out to GBL, initially we'd say, look, you got to talk to somebody who's going to look at your entire financial planning situation. So we say kind of reach out to, Karen, Stephen. I know you guys can have a great initial conversation, see, hey, how does this work with the overall picture? And then we have a great working relationship where you can then bring us in, and then we can start to crunch the numbers and see, like, hey, what does this actually look like for this client based on their context and where you're trying to take them?
Wonderful.
Tatenda, this has been amazing. Is there anything else that you can think of that you would like to share just with respect to GBL, IPPs, yourself?
Yeah, for sure. So something that's very important to us is we want to give everybody a fair shake, and in terms of considering this to see if it makes sense for them. So one thing we do is, I know I kind of mentioned you bringing in GBL to crunch the numbers. So we do that on a complimentary basis.
Nice.
In terms of running illustrations to see, hey, what's this going to look like before you sort of sign on the dotted line?
Try it before you buy.
Exactly. So we sort of have to have that, I guess, initial approach. But other than that, I think we covered a lot of it, which is we think this is something that's worth considering for a lot of people in terms of, hey, is this going to help me to, I've got this corporation, I've got this business, I've got all this success that's coming in, but how can I best utilize it to not only save my retirement, but maybe even do it more efficiently so that it's going to cost me less to save for my retirement. I can do other things, like I can give more, I can spend time at home with the kids or the family, or go on more vacations or go on better vacations. Kind of the life planning that I know you guys talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this can really kind of give business owners to build the life that they want as efficiently as possible. And we're just happy to be involved in a small part in hopefully making that happen.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I certainly appreciate the partners that we've brought on and the relationships that we've created. So thank you very much to Tenda. Thank you very much to GBL Inc. for all the information, coming down to the studio, sharing with us your wisdom about IPPs. This has been a great conversation.
It really has.
Do you want to wrap us up?
Absolutely. And you and I, we'll be talking to one of my clients in the next couple of weeks. So,
amen to that. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
I am too. Again, just I want to echo what Steve has said. Thank you so much for your time. And till next week.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing, or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. Canvas Wealth is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy cannot be guaranteed and is subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals and do not represent the opinion of Q Wealth as a firm.